Did you know that Wisconsin grows somewhere between 90 and 95% of all the ginseng produced in the U.S.? Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network. We're going to be talking about ginseng with our guest today, Mary Hausbeck from the Department of Plant, Soil, and Microbial Sciences at Michigan State University. She's the Associate Chair for Administration, a University Distinguished Professor, and an Extension Specialist. So it'll be great to welcome her to the show. And certainly, if you're curious about growing ginseng, or maybe have questions about it, what would you like to know about its impact on our economy, or just how the plant grows? Love to hear from you. You can give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And Mary Hausbeck with us by phone. Mary, thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Sure, my pleasure.
Tell us how about your work with ginseng.
Well, Michigan has a very small industry, and I became involved in that ginseng industry, probably 15 years ago. And then as we began to learn more about the Wisconsin industry and their needs, we decided to join forces with them and approach some of the problems facing the industry on a regional scale. So it was certainly not intentional, but I'm glad that I became involved with the industry because it's fascinating and Wisconsin has fabulous growers.
So what makes Wisconsin such a great place to grow ginseng?
You know, the growers would say the soil in central Wisconsin is unique and provides the shape and the texture and the taste that those abroad have learned to associate with high-quality, pure ginseng.
It's interesting, and I can recall hosting a show quite a few years back, at a ginseng event in central Wisconsin. It was really a lot of fun to see the fields and to learn so much more about the crop itself. Maybe for, people know that it's expensive and, you know, there can be some profit in. Why is it so expensive?
It's a very expensive crop to grow. Excuse me. This is a perennial crop. It is seeded and then there are at least 3 to 4 years that is required for that crop to mature. And so there's a lot of investment that is needed by that grower before they ever begin to see a harvest. There is a lot of risk in growing this crop. It's very susceptible to a number of pests. And just knowing exactly what this crop needs to be cultured is quite unique, and it's so different than some of the other agronomic crops, such as corn and soybean. So it takes a high level of expertise. And so imagine, you know, making an investment in these parcels, which is, of course, the land, the seed, the shade structures that many people would see as they fly into central Wisconsin or travel the countryside, and the labor, a very labor-intensive crop, and then imagining not getting one penny return for a minimum of 3 years and all the things that can happen to an agricultural crop during that time. And actually, prices today are quite a bit lower than they had been recently. Low enough, in fact, that it can be hard for ginseng growers to make the profit that they once envisioned, even 5 years ago.
Yeah. I remember talking to a ginseng grower, and he said you have to be really careful about when you start a new plot that you're not planting in a place where it grew before.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other fascinating thing that I've come to learn is that, you know, growers today learned how to grow the crop often from previous family members or perhaps a neighbor or someone that they perhaps had worked for, maybe as a high school student or a college summer student, that this is an industry where the craft of growing the crop absolutely has been handed down. It's would be very unusual for someone to come into the industry not having any knowledge or experience growing the crop in some capacity and saying, I'm going to grow this crop and I'm going to make it work. That's just not what I have seen in this industry. It really is a craft that has been handed down through the generations. You know, within most of the growers are in Marathon County. So there's a lot of expertise, a lot of individuals that I have met can speak to those that they have known that perhaps grew the crop previously or are involved today.
Why is it that the crop won't grow in an area where it grew the first time?
You know, that's a question that at this juncture we can only make some guesses about. You know, it's possible that perhaps there's something that is called autotoxicity that can happen where maybe chemicals or materials released in the soil from that ginseng root is such that even after the root is harvested and pulled from the ground, that those materials that would have been left in the ground are inhibitory to a new crop that would come in of ginseng. Perhaps it's an accumulation of soil molds or plant pathogens that accumulated over those 3, 4, or 5 years of growing that initial crop that would make it much less successful to go back in. It's not really known.
It's really interesting because a couple of the people I talked to said you had to be so careful. You had to keep such good records of where it had grown before, and occasionally you'd lay out, somebody would lay out a plot, and then there might be a little corner of the plot where nothing grew, and they'd know.
Exactly. Oh. And you think of this crop being grown in this area for 100 years, so, you know, there's going to be some opportunity for overlap from time to time, and then they may see exactly what you describe as an area of that garden, as they are called, just not thriving well.
So what, yeah, it's really interesting to me. And even after 50 years, there's still problems with growing it over the top of where it grew before. Talk about the crop itself. What's the mystique of the crop, or why is it so valuable to some people?
All right. So first of all, the crop is classified as a root and tuber crop. So you know, it's in the same, like, crop grouping, if you will, for some purposes, as a carrot. So it's valued for the root, and that root is considered especially valuable if it has a shape, perhaps the shape, as they say, of a person, and that would be perhaps forking in that root where it could appear to have arms, and then continuous forking that it would appear to have legs. A ginseng root that might resemble a carrot, for instance, would not be as valued as one that would be more knobby or have a unique shape as I described. And the root then, it's dug in the fall, again, after growing for 3+ years. And then predominantly the root then is, of course, washed, but then it's dried. And so a lot of the industry is all centered around a dried ginseng root product that can be sold whole. The root, when it's harvested, tends to have small rootlets or what are called fiber. You know, so these would be very, very thin, almost hair-like structures that are growing from the root. Those are typically pruned off, and then they can be used in other applications. Then the whole root can also be sliced and sold as slices for use perhaps in a chicken soup stock or other cooking. It can also, of course, be ground and then used in capsules that would be taken. And then a lot of growers I know and those that have grown up with the crop, you know, they'll just take a piece of that root and they will chew it. And, of course, you'll get the full flavor of the root that way. And, you know, other purposes include, like, there are candies, there have been gums. and of course used in other types of food products. And so that dried root has really been the historical use, and even today is the majority of the use. But more recently, there's been interest in what is considered and called a fresh root, which means then that drying process does not happen, and the root then is more perishable. But again, it can be sold whole and then used in various cooking applications as desired.
You know, and there are there's wild ginseng as well. Is there a difference between the wild ginseng and the cultivated root?
Sure. You know, and of course, ginseng is a protected plant. Now, the wild is growing under a lot of competition, you know, so it's growing in an understory of a forest, and that ginseng rootlet is competing with tree roots in understory. And so typically that root is smaller, and it must grow for a much longer period of time, usually 7 years is considered perhaps a minimum. And it's far more valuable than a cultivated root. In contrast, a cultivated root, you know, it has it much easier, right?
Yeah.
It's not growing typically in an understory. It's got the shade to mimic that understory, but it's getting more fertilizer. It's not competing with all the underbrush that's part of the forest. And so it's going to grow faster. It's going to have, you know, a more robust size sooner. It's also not as prized as a result.
Well, it's a pretty cool plant, if you ask me.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. And of course, it's one that, you know, probably many of your listeners have seen because it is grown under a shade structure, which is quite different than many of our other horticultural crops.
Yeah, absolutely. Mary Hausbeck, our guest today from the Department of Plant, Soil, and Microbial Sciences at Michigan State University. We're talking with her about ginseng today, the growth of ginseng. Here in Wisconsin, we produce most of the U.S. crop of ginseng right here in Marathon County, primarily. Questions for her? Maybe you're involved in growing. I'd love to hear from you, too. Or if you have a question or comment, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Dave Potratz, our engineer today, Jill Nadeau, our producer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. We're talking about ginseng and its growth here in Wisconsin with our guest, Mary Hausbeck, from the Department of Plant, Soil, and Microbial Sciences at Michigan State University. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining in. Questions for her? Or comments, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. So when is ginseng typically harvested?
It's usually harvested in the fall. Typically, you know, depending on weather conditions, it could begin in late August, and it can go into November, you know, again, depending on how large the grower is and how many acres they have to cover. And, you know, if we have a rainy fall, it sure can delay things as far as harvesting the crop. So
yeah.
A lot of it's weather dependent.
What's the average acreage? Any idea, you know, a typical farmer, how many acres would he or she have?
Yeah, you know, so the pattern in ginseng is following the pattern of some of our other agricultural producers where you tend to have perhaps, you know, more smaller growers, and those growers could have maybe a total of 3 acres, and those 3 acres may be in different stages of maturity. We don't have as many of those middle-sized growers anymore, and then we have a few growers that have made big investments and have been in the industry for a long time. And so they could have, certainly more than 50-plus acres.
Yeah.
And so you kind of had those two ends of the spectrum, which in a way mirrors some of our other agricultural trends.
Yeah, it does indeed. Well, we have a caller, Chris from Evansville. Chris, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, thank you for taking the call. I wondered if the guest could speak a little bit to how ginseng is so prized within the Hmong community. I don't know a lot about it, but maybe she could tell us some more.
I think I heard the question. I thought I heard ginseng production in the Hmong community.
Or the value of ginseng to the Hmong community, I think she was interested in knowing about.
Okay. So this is a very interesting crop for a lot of reasons, but it's pretty exciting that we have about 20-plus percent of the ginseng growers are Hmong growers. We often have programs then to translate some of the recommendations and make sure that we're reaching all segments of the Hmong population, but they're quite active. They tend to be among some of the smaller growers, and so they are in the marketplace the same as the other growers, and, you know, attend the field days and are really great partners as we try to move the industry forward and solve some of the problems.
Yeah. Does the Hmong community, I mean, is it a valued product or tuber to the Hmong people in general?
As a supplement?
Yeah.
I have found, I don't know if I would characterize that any differently than other individuals that grow the crop, because everyone that grows the crop, including the Hmong community, see it as a really valued supplement. I would say those that are from China tend to prize the product very highly, and that's where a lot of the exports go, would be to China, not so much to, you know, Vietnam or Cambodia, but really more to China. But, you know, the Hmong, as being good growers of the crop and working to supply that crop, you know, they absolutely abide by the properties and take it, as do, I think, every grower I've ever met.
Yeah. Rebecca from Madison, it's your turn now. Hi, Rebecca.
Hello.
Yeah.
I'm calling because I was curious about, especially since you just talked about exporting, how is the product affected by the recent tariffs? And I'll just take my answer off the air.
All right. Do the tariffs affect, or have the tariffs affected ginseng producers?
Yes. there had always been a smaller tariff associated, but yes, those tariffs have increased along with other industries that have experienced increase in tariffs. And so this year, in working with the industry, our goal is to try to work with the growers to reduce the cost of producing the crop, because in some instances, the buyers are expecting the growers to, absorb these extra tariffs and costs. And so to help the industry survive this particular time, there's a lot of interest in seeing how they can get the job done with a lower cost to input. So it is something that's a priority coming up this year.
And thanks again, Rebecca. Ray from Stevens Point, we turn to you next. What's on your mind?
I have two questions. One, I want to know what kind of fertilizer does ginseng require? And then secondly, I have heard that after growing ginseng, it removes certain nutrients from the soil that then make it difficult to use that field for anything else.
Okay. Let's start with the first question. So for fertilizers, you know, each grower tends to have what they consider a bit of a proprietary, maybe blend or use of fertilizers. But in general, I would say that they're using the broadcast use, and then also some will do a foliar feed. And if you're interested in growing the crop and knowing more about that specifically, I would suggest that you work with your county agriculture extension agent to get some of those specifics. But it's really not too far afield from what I know in some of our horticultural crops. So it's really a mix of side dressing, and then some will use a foliar spray that will include some micronutrients. And everyone's convinced, each grower is convinced that their special blend, you know, gives them superior performance. So they usually don't like to talk about that because it's kind of their trade secret. And then as far as pulling nutrients from the soil such that other crops can't be grown there, you know, we had talked just a bit ago about how once ginseng is grown in an area, in a particular plot or parcel, that ginseng cannot be grown there again. But I've never heard growers speak to not being able to go back in with a corn or soybeans or sunflowers, which are pretty widely grown in the area. So I've not understood that you couldn't put something other than ginseng in that parcel. And I think that's been done fairly routinely. Many of the growers do use rented ground, and so I'm sure that that grower that is renting the ground, you know, certainly desires to, you know, be able to use that ground in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Ray, for that question. Appreciate it. And the fertilizer itself, might it be, you know, like a 10-10-10 sort of? I mean, or is it a heavier nitrogen user? Do you know?
Yeah, it's probably going to be a little bit more than that. Again, it's pretty proprietary. it's like a lot of things, right? There are a lot of different paths to success.
Yeah.
And so, in my experience, there's never been like one magic formula, and you know, only one person knows it. But there are a lot of paths to success in the nutrient area, and you know, people don't generally like to talk about it, but lots of people have been successful over time. So we know that, you know, there are lots of ways to make that happen well.
Well, let's go to Dot from Manitowoc next. Hi, Dot.
Hi. Good morning. I have a box of ginseng tea in my hand, and it says it increases energy without stimulants. It helps to cope with physical and mental stress. The calories are only 5, total fat 0, and I don't add anything to the ginseng tea. I don't add lemon. I just put the ginseng, they're small little pellets, call them, very, very small. But I don't put anything in it, and I'm enjoying it. And then you can eat it as you're finished with the tea. I bought the box in Manitowoc, so you shop around at your local place of selling tea and enjoy the tea, and it's supposed to be very good for us. So go out and buy some.
There you go, Dot. Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Well, Mary, that's kind of what is promoted, isn't it, in terms of the value of ginseng as a product?
Yeah, and I can add to that a little bit. At first, I'm going to put a plug in and make sure that the ginseng tea you're drinking is from Wisconsin. You know, I have learned that you really want to make sure that you buy directly from a Wisconsin producer. There are a number of ways to do that. And in that way, you can really be assured of what you have and that it is genuine ginseng and is of the level that will, of course, give you some of these health benefits. So I'm going to say that first. And then the other thing is the Ginseng Board of Wisconsin, you know, early on, I didn't really understand all the medical studies that this organization partakes in. And these are studies that are done at the Mayo Clinic. They're done at Johns Hopkins. They're done at University of Illinois. And, you know, these are studies that are, of course, done by medical research physicians. And one of the the reports are published in peer-reviewed journals, and so we know that those results are very solid. And, you know, one of one of the outcomes has been, for instance, the use of ginseng for those that are undergoing chemotherapy. Of course, one of the detriments of chemotherapy can be, you know, loss of energy.
Yeah.
And taking ginseng, you know, has been found in one of these medical studies to help increase and give a boost to that energy level when undergoing that difficult treatment. So.
Yeah, it's amazing. Let's go to Steve in Marathon County next. Hi, Steve.
Hello. I'm a cash crop farmer in Marathon County. I do corn and soybeans, and I've been thinking about transitioning over to some ginseng, at least a portion of my acreage. But I hear about, you know, these sulfide mines that they're talking about putting in like, near the Eau Claire River. There's a gold mine they're talking about doing, and then up in the town of Lynn. And it doesn't take a brain surgeon to see that we're in the same watershed. And I'm wondering if some, you know, we have flooding here in Wisconsin seasonally. Is anybody doing anything to protect the ginseng industry from these type of threats? Because I don't want to switch over, and then 3 years down the road from now, we have a disaster, and I can't harvest my four-year crop.
Yeah. Well, what do you think, Mary?
Well, that's certainly a bit out of my purview, but I know I would welcome and invite you to talk with the Ginseng Board of Wisconsin and bring that to their attention and get their input on that.
Yeah, it's I was going to ask you about climate change, and would climate change have some effect on ginseng in the state?
You know, it does, in that if we get into more extremes of weather, it becomes difficult. There was a time several years ago when there was a late snow in May. And, of course, when you have these structures that provide the shade over the crop, that snow was just enough and provided enough weight that it caused collapse of a lot of the structures and damaged the crop below. So that was a terrible disaster to the industry. The crop is not irrigated. It relies on natural rainfall. So if we get into extremes where there's a drought, there is not means in place to irrigate the crop, or if we get into times where we have too much rainfall, that then exacerbates some of these soil molds that cause a rot of the root, and that can be difficult as well. And this particular crop would not fare as well if we're under continuous 90-degree temperatures, especially under the shade, which actually in some cases is that black nylon fabric that can heat up a bit. So, you know, we are worried about the extremes that can be caused.
And I wanted to also talk about price and prices aren't as good as they were some years back. Somebody once told me that ginseng farmers probably shouldn't have exported so many roots to places like Canada, who then became competitors. And I have no idea if that's a true statement, but can you comment on that?
Well, the Canadians have a very large and robust ginseng industry. That's absolutely true. And, you know, there has been concern that with some investment from the government that has given the growers really quite an advantage. And I know that on the research side, of course, the government, you know, makes quite a significant investment in their ginseng. And the Canadians, of course, grow a fine product, and sometimes they like to represent their product perhaps as being from Wisconsin. I'm not saying that happens all the time, but you could see where that might be a marketing strategy. And the same happens with root that's grown in China. Ginseng root is not going to have the same kind of reputation as Wisconsin ginseng. So perhaps if you sell it as being from Wisconsin and perhaps people don't know any better, you can command a higher price point. So there's been some difficult competitive situations that the Wisconsin industry has had, to try to figure out a good way around. And it's an ongoing sort of situation.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So the marketing there may be a little misleading, and that leads to increased product being sold, and therefore prices come down a little bit.
You know, it's just it's always a matter of really policing, you know, what is being sold, where is its origin, is it mislabeled, is it using a distinction that indicates that it's from Wisconsin when it is not. And so those are always ongoing efforts. And, you know, that's something that the Wisconsin industry has spent a lot of time making sure that they're diligent about.
Let's take another call. Tom in Appleton, it's your turn now. Hi, Tom.
Hey, thanks, Larry. Say another technical question. About 50 years ago when I was a kid, I was thinking about growing ginseng. And I did some study, and I saw the high inputs of things like fungicides. You alluded to root rot. Kind of turned me off to it. If I'm supposedly growing this high-quality herbal material or root material, and then it's got pesticide residue. My question is, has that technology come along into the area of biorational fungicides, which are typically fungi or bacteria that fight the bad fungi or bacteria? And I'll take my answer on the air and off the phone.
All right. Thank you.
There you go. That's an excellent question. And one of the reasons I became involved in the industry is that some of the diseases and molds really were making it very difficult to grow the crop successfully. And to get it past the three-year mark was almost impossible. I think one of the key elements that was a good contributor is understanding that some of the problems were coming in on the seed, and that once the seed was cleaned up, and there are a number of ways to do that, but once the seed was cleaned up, it really took the pressure off of the industry, and things improved pretty readily. Instead of spiraling downward with just a continual root rot issues, poor yield and poor quality, the seed really, you know, is the lifeblood of any industry. And once that was cleaned up, the burden eased quite a bit. Now, there are still some requirements for some plant protection products. But again, the products today compared to 50 years ago are vastly different. And they are reduced risk. They're environmentally friendly. They have been registered under really stringent guidelines, and those can include biopesticides, biorationals, and some of the fungicides that, while they are fungicides, they're derived from, for instance, mushrooms. And so they may not have the title of a biocontrol, but yet they are derived from a naturally occurring organism. And so things have changed pretty dramatically, but understanding that we really needed to start with clean seed was a huge, huge step forward.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Well, what research are you doing right now that involves ginseng?
Well, we've been working on a number of different avenues. One is to try to keep the industry viable during this bit of a difficult time with the trade issue, and that's to reduce inputs. And so we'll be showcasing different strategies and then looking at the end result. And we showcase that to growers usually in August right on their farms. And along the question of the last caller, we continue to look at more environmentally friendly ways to protect the crop and make sure that the inputs are such that it's a crop that does not have pesticide residues. And that's super important, not only for use within the Wisconsin community, but also abroad.
So if you're thinking about growing ginseng, as we've had a couple of people talk about, Tom just mentioned that he'd thought about it a long time ago. Somebody else called and was kind of thinking about it. What's your advice to sort of getting enough knowledge and getting involved?
Yeah, so the Ginseng Board of Wisconsin has an office in Marathon County, and each year I'm involved in putting together a three-ring binder. It's a notebook that has all kinds of information, including the latest research results, tips and tricks, you know, to be successful, and going to the office, talking with them in the office, picking up a notebook. That's the way to get started.
Well, that makes a lot of sense, and I imagine the Ginseng Growers Association, I guess I'd want to be a member of that for help.
Absolutely.
For help and support.
Absolutely. This industry is one that talks to each other a lot. You know, it's super common for growers to talk among themselves over the course of each day or certainly each week. Are you seeing this? You know, I'm seeing this problem. You know, what's happening here? I mean, it's really a nice collegial group that way. And again, you know, to have someone that is experienced, knows the crop, and has been successful, that's super important in helping to tutor those that are interested in getting started.
And, you know, I can see why we're located right in Marathon County based on what you talked about earlier with the long history there, you know, people learning from their father or their grandfather or other neighbors. And so it kind of centralizes it there in Marathon County in many ways. What about other parts of Wisconsin? Is it just the special climate and soil conditions in Marathon County that make it so attractive?
In part, there are some other growers in a few other counties. I think there are four or five other counties, as I recall, that have one or two or a handful of growers. It's just most of the acres and the greatest concentration of ginseng growers happens to be in Marathon County. But Wisconsin as a state certainly, you know, more than surpasses probably all the other states in the U.S. combined for the production of this crop, for sure.
Well, I tell you what, Mary, it was a lot of fun talking. Is there a ginseng festival in the fall again or not?
You know, there will not be one this September. It seems that they're going to take a year off and then, I guess, listen for any plans thereafter. But there have been two international ginseng festivals, and it's brought people in from all over the world. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, I bet. Been a lot of fun for you. Mary, thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it very much. Mary Hausbeck is from the Department of Plant, Soil, and Microbial Sciences at Michigan State University. She's the Associate Chair for Administration, a university distinguished professor, and an extension specialist. So here we are in our state growing 90 to 95% of all of the ginseng grown in Wisconsin. As for me, it's always fun to drive north and through Marathon County and see those covered beds. And if I'm traveling with somebody new to the state or even somebody who's been around for a while, almost invariably they'll say, "What's growing? Is that tobacco or what's growing underneath those tents?" kind of. And I have a chance to talk a little about ginseng. So that's always a lot of fun for me. And it may be for you, too, as you drive through the state. Another thing you might see as you drive through the state is the sandhill crane. The recovery of the sandhill crane has been just an amazing success story in species recovery. And we're going to be talking about sandhill cranes and other cranes as well with a couple of guests from the International Crane Foundation. I'm Larry Mueller. You are listening to the Ideas Network.